this computer. Okay. Cool. You guys want to shake out the jitters? No?
Yeah, no, I realized that I'm just sorry. I have bad allergies and I'm like, oh gosh, I'm feeling that tickle in my throat. So I don't want to start coughing uncontrollably. So I might like mute myself if Val's talking and I'll pop a cough drop, I guess, just in case.
No, don't worry, because that shows how real this episode's going to be.
Sacramento.
Hello, and welcome to JAPA Talks, your go-to podcast for everything about smart parking solutions and the transformation of urban mobility, here to guide you through the latest in technology and innovation in our cities. Whether you're involved in city planning, an enthusiast of urban development, or just curious about future trends, you'll find our discussions enlightening. In today's episode, we're excited to explore the Sacramento Municipal Utility District's innovative projects focused on sustainability and advanced energy management technologies. Joining us are two esteemed guests from SMUD. First, we have Rachel Huang, Director of Customer and Grid Strategy, who leads the Zero Carbon Program and the Six-Pillar EV Strategy. We also have Alfred Ernst, Facilities and Maintenance Supervisor, who is implementing diesel hydrogen-generated fuel cells for backup power. We'll discuss their groundbreaking work, the challenges they face, and their vision for the future of energy management. Welcome to JAPA Talks.
So, SMUD is everywhere. I go to events in Sacramento. I see SMUD's logo. You guys are pushing innovation. You guys are supporting entrepreneurs in the surrounding area. You guys are doing partnerships to really push a lot of stuff. Rachel, I want to start off with you. What are some of the major projects you're currently working on at SMUD?
So my team has responsibility for bringing the customer and the grid together. I think one of the things that we see here at SMUD as we are striving towards our zero carbon vision is that working in partnership with our customers is a really great opportunity for us. So, you know, we've set a very bold goal of zero carbon emissions by 2030. And yes, there are things we need to do on our generation side and the things from a utility perspective, but customers can actually be part of the solution as well. You know, we see customers adopting different technologies. Electric vehicles is one, battery storage is another. They're actually able to use their technologies in a way that not only help them for the things that they want to achieve, but they can actually use those technologies to help us with regards to our sustainable mission as well. So a lot of things that we're doing are, starting up some customer programs that allow them to leverage their technology to help them save on their bill, but also help SMUD incorporate more renewables into the mix to be able to create capacity so that we've got more reliability in our system, especially as we make this transition to zero carbon. So we call that building our virtual power plant. So I think that's been a key focus of us is how do we get our customers to adopt these technologies, partner with us, and be able to build what we call this virtual power plant out of all of our customers and the devices that they adopt.
Interesting. That's the first time I've heard virtual power plant before. Wow, 2030, that's an aggressive timeline. Are you guys making headway on that? How is it looking so far?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we created this goal back in 2020 when Paul Lau became our CEO, and then our board challenged us to come up with a plan of how to make it happen in 6 months. So by spring of 2021, had minted what we call our zero carbon plan. So I think based upon what we know, we believe that we can get there about 90% of the way there with existing technologies that we have. But to your point about the need for innovation, that last 10%, we really need innovation, looking at different business models, looking at different technologies in order to make our way there. But, we actually provide biannual updates to our board on how we're doing. We're definitely making some progress relative to increasing the amount of renewables that we're doing. As I mentioned, launching some new programs and efforts to address that technology area. Definitely going after a lot of grants to help support the financial aspect of all the things that we need to do. So definitely chugging along. But yeah, 2030 is coming up quickly. So definitely a lot to do in order to get there.
Yeah, time moves like quick. I mean, I feel like 2030 is just going to be, it's going to be next year already.
Yeah, it's closer than it seems.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Rachel, I totally skipped the whole portion. I mean, what got you to SMUD? How long have you been there?
Oh. Like, yeah, I mean. Yeah, no, it's a good question, actually. Next year will be 20 years at SMUD, believe it or not. And wow. I would have never realized that I would have worked for an electric utility, actually, that had not been necessarily in the context that I thought I would have. But so I studied chemical engineering as an undergrad, and then worked in consumer product development out of school. So wanted to work for Procter & Gamble in consumer products research, working on Charmin and Puffs facial tissue and lots of brands that people know. But wanted to do something, you know, that impacted the world. So went and studied energy and environmental policy from a graduate school standpoint. And then what actually brought me to SMUD, still, even though energy and environmental policy, you think that that would be a good path to a utility, but had not necessarily crossed my radar yet. But my husband decided he wanted to be a winemaker. So we moved to California so he could go to Davis. So he did the viticulture and enology program at UC Davis, and actually is now a professor there at UC Davis in the viticulture and enology program. But so we stayed in California. So I needed a job. So looked around and actually did not have a job when I first came to Sacramento. But then I was doing some volunteer work with the Society of Women Engineers, and someone there had worked at Rancho Seco at our old nuclear power plant. She's like, oh, you really should look at getting a job with SMUD. And I was like, SMUD, you know, that coming from outside of Sacramento, that acronym doesn't necessarily sound that great, but, you know, they're like, oh, everybody in Sacramento loves SMUD. They love their utility. I'm like, this is very interesting. Who loves their utility? But SMUD is very beloved in the community. They do amazing things. And so actually, you know, went on the website, found a job, applied, and started out doing customer programs and planning on the customer business unit, and then just throughout the paths ended up in this role. But yeah, I didn't realize I would have started working for a utility, but there's so many fascinating things actually about working for a utility, and SMUD is a fantastic place to work and is very much recognized nationally and internationally for what it does. So very, very fortunate to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I have a similar feeling as you. I didn't think I'd be in parking growing up. Yeah, but here I am. And then, I mean, I'm pretty sure when you were applying to SMUD, you're like, yeah, this is awesome. Al works there. I got to work there for sure.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
I'm going to push this question to you, Al. What got you at SMUD?
Yeah, you know, I've had quite the journey. I started out, went to a trade school when I first started at UTI, wanted to be an auto mechanic, and figured out quite quickly that that wasn't the kind of living I wanted to make. So I joined the U.S. Air Force. And going into the Air Force, I was fortunate in the 4 years that I was in the Air Force, I had two totally separate careers. I was a Tank 2 missile facilities maintenance technician, which the Tank 2 missiles based in Tucson, Arizona, were our largest intercontinental ballistic missiles. I worked on the facility, so I got trained in power production, HVAC, electrical, elevators, pneumatics. It's like a small city underground. So great training, great experience, and they phase those out. So if you go to the museum in Green Valley, you'll see my name on a plaque at the museum because I helped shut that silo down. And I transferred to advanced avionics and got selected for a Black Project, which is the F-117 stealth fighter. So I was in a Black Project for 2 years out at Nellis Air Force Base, got flown out to a top secret base when we only had two of those planes. It was an R&D, research and development, really advanced technology. Got out, joined the Air National Guard, learned helicopter C-130s, worked for United Airlines and facilities, well, aircraft side for a little bit, then I went into facilities because that was my true background, HVAC. So worked there for several years, ended up jumping over to Intel Corporation, in the facilities department, really advanced, maintaining their office buildings, data centers, and so forth. Got laid off, unfortunately, and they contracted out maintenance and jumped to SMUD. I actually landed with SMUD up at Fresh Pond, which is our hydro facilities. So I was maintaining the hydro facilities, buildings, and so forth. I've been with SMUD for 17 years. Came down to the headquarters campus.
Whoa, that's a long time.
Yeah, building maintenance mechanic, and worked my way up through. I'm now the supervisor over projects. And, you know, I love innovation because that's where I come from with the stealth fighter and so forth. So on our side, you know, we try to not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. And so that's what we're trying to do in facilities. We're trying to downsize our carbon footprint that SMUD generates in our operation. Okay. And so one of the tasks is we're converting our fleet over to EV charging. And with that, you know, in the old days, a few years back, they would buy the EV and then we wouldn't have any place to charge it. So we wouldn't have the infrastructure in place. So we were putting the cart before the horse. Now we plan ahead. We work with our fleet and they tell us what their purchases are going to be over the next several years. And we build out our infrastructure prior to receiving our building. So now at the East Campus, we completed a project of 47 chargers around our shops building. We're waiting for those EVs to come in. We also encourage our employees to adopt EVs. And so we have a workplace charging, as you know. We use with our workplace charging, our employees can charge at work. They have to pay a small fee to do that. But as EVs have taken off, we're getting more EVs and the workplace charging is becoming very limited. So employees are trying to look at where is a charger available. That's where JAPA has come in for us. We're using, give you a little bit of a plug here. JAPA is pretty easy system install. So we're installing JAPA. We've had it for a while in our garage when we refurbished our headquarters campus. We used it as to indicate what parking was available in a very small garage we have. But now we're extending that to all of our EV employee parking so that employees can tell what parking is available when. We found that it's a cheaper alternative as opposed to installing smart chargers. The smart chargers require connection to the cloud. We have to give an internet service, which we don't like to put mix our internet with our internal customer network. We like to keep that separate for security reasons. So all that, we use cellular communication, and that has a cost, and you have your cloud service on top of that. So
that's awesome.
So we've come up with a good walk around on that. We're also looking at hydrogen fuel cells for our standby generators.
Actually, that's going to be a topic coming up for you, because as I was writing the script here, and I was like, hydrogen fuel cells, batteries, I was like, what is this? I don't even know what I'm writing here. So I would love to dive in on that. I'm still really boggled that I didn't know this whole history about you, Al, about you. If I wanted to buy an F1 fighter, you're the guy to talk to, pretty much. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really I think it's very interesting to do these podcasts with, because I'm honestly, even if I don't push this out to market, I'm learning so much from all of this, which is really, really amazing. And Rachel, I don't know if you know about JAPA, go Ags, by the way, because JAPA was started at UC Davis.
That's what I heard. Yeah. And actually, I park in the parking garage, so I am a user of JAPA. Yeah. I pull in and my car has, you know, goes over the little bump and I do look at it. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Now you say you JAPA like it's hot. That's what our motto is. We like to JAPA like it's hot here. Awesome. Al, great, great background. I'm going to bring it over to Rachel real quick, because I had some questions around. You're a grid specialist, strategist. Right.
My team does the customer and grid strategy for SMUD. So we're bringing the customer side and the grid side together. So, you know, EVs are actually a really perfect example, right? Which is, you know, customers are adopting electric vehicles, right? So, well, you need to charge electric vehicles. And so when you charge your electric vehicle, we need to supply it with energy, and the grid needs to be able to support the flow of the electrons to charge your electric vehicle. But, you know, one thing that we very much think about relative to the use of electricity is when you use the electricity, right? And, you know, as we are trying to figure out how do we decarbonize our energy supply, you know, the sun only shines during the day, right? And wind tends to blow at night, but not always. And it's not always predictable based upon weather. And then you've got other renewable generation and other clean energy resources and things like that. But it's not like the sun shines all the time. And so therefore, it's not available all the time, right? Then you think about, well, when do people charge their electric vehicle? It's like, okay, we have an EV in our home. My husband actually tends to drive it because UC Davis is a little bit further away than the 4-mile commute that I take to SMUD. But, you know, he drives to work. he plugs in his vehicle. It probably charges a little bit at work, and then, you know, it's ready to go before he's going to leave for home. And so we don't actually charge our EV that much during the week, but we charge our EV, you know, on the weekend. But if people didn't have charging at work, they would go, they drive around, they come home, they plug in their car. And depending upon whether they set anything on their car, they might start charging the minute that they plug in, right? That could be 5 o'clock when they get home from work, or maybe they take their kids to soccer or something like that. So maybe it's not till 7. But, you know, the time when customers use the most energy in Sacramento, so the biggest demand, we call it at SMUD, is summertime, you know, between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. So you know that our rates are set that they're the most expensive between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. in the summer. And the reason why it's the most expensive is that's because everybody wants electricity during that time, right? So how do we help our customers actually save money on their bill, right? And so, like, actually, if they can avoid using electricity between 5 and 8, whether it's charging their car or using their HVAC system or, you know, playing on their Xbox or whatever, they can take advantage of lower cost electricity, you know, before 5 o'clock, after 8 p.m. And so, you know, from a customer and grid strategy standpoint, there's this customer behavior piece, right? Which is like, well, I come home, I got to cook dinner, my kids are doing things, they want to, you know, be watching TV, or they want to do something and decompress after school. So you have to really think about what's the customer behavior and the customer lifestyle piece, and then how does that relate regarding to their energy use. And so with EVs, for example, it's like, okay, well, I come home and I plug in my car. Do I really need to charge my car at 5 o'clock at night on a hot summer day? You know, I'm not going anywhere until I leave at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I can plug in my car and set it to not charge until after midnight, which is when everybody's asleep. You know, not everybody is using their energy anymore. And so we actually have a rate discount where if you charge your EV, or if you have an EV, you get a rate discount between midnight and 6 a.m. because that's the cheapest time to charge. And that's for your whole house, actually. It's not just for your EV. But, you know, the piece about customer grid strategy is really understanding customers still need to live their lives, right? They don't want to bend over backwards to change their energy use behaviors and change their lifestyles. But if there's a way that we can use technology to help them, for example, so that the car can start charging at midnight, and but they don't have to go in at midnight and plug in their car, the technology helps them make it easy, then that's how we're able to optimize, right? So if customers aren't charging their EVs until midnight, or when the demand is not as high, then we can save money, right? We don't have to buy the really expensive power. We don't have to generate the power that has the most greenhouse gas emissions. And then we can pass on those savings to our customers. Because we're community owned, we like to keep rates low. So we want to keep our costs low, but we also want to do it in a very sustainable way. And so we want to use the energy when it's cleanest, right? So how can we take advantage of when solar is generating the most in the springtime, in the late morning and the early afternoon? So that's actually where workplace charging can be really, really key in the future is, hey, if I'm plugged in at work, I should soak up that solar energy in the spring, in the late morning and early afternoon, and not charge, you know, between 5 and 8 p.m. because that way I can use the most renewables, I can do it at the cheapest time, and I can take relief off of the time when it's most pressured to the customer. So that's really bringing the customer in partnership with the grid and really being able to provide that service for our customers.
Because I mean, data is key here to really see what habits these customers are having. And I mean, to change someone's habit, I mean, through education, like, hey, if you guys charge your car at midnight, you know, like, but here's the technologies to do it, your life would be easier. I mean, that's difficult. And you have to worry about diversity and inclusion for everybody, because not everybody has a smartphone. Not everybody has these technologies. Exactly. So that's your job, pretty much.
Yes. We got to figure all that out. Yes. It makes it fun for sure. And I think that's where having a background in consumer products and sort of really understanding that fundamentally a customer is not going to change their behavior unless they have an incentive to do so. And it's not always a financial incentive, right? It's how does it impact my life? Can it fit into the lifestyle that I want and the values that I have and how I run my, you know, my life on a day-to-day basis? And so they have to make those judgment calls, and we have to understand that as we're thinking about what we can and cannot shape relative to energy use behavior.
Yeah, man, I'm kind of jealous now because I'm right at the cutoff from PG&E to SMUD. I'm right in West Sacramento, so I was like, oh man, you guys have great values here. I wish I was part of you. Wow, Mariana, did you learn a lot from that? I learned a ton.
Well, you're on mute, by the way. Something a lot of people yeah. don't realize that we have to, you know, we have to balance electricity. In the past, there hasn't been a lot of ways to store electricity. We're building up utility grade battery storage right now, which helps with this ebb and flow of solar and wind and other renewables, right? But in the past, you know, as loads go up, we have to generate more, and as loads go down, we have to lower our generation, right? So there was no effective way to if you generate a surplus, there's no place to put it. The electricity doesn't work that way, and a lot of people don't understand that. And so that's
is this where diesel hydrogen generated fuel cells come in as backup?
No, a technology that we're working on, we're actually testing a technology here on site. We work with R&D on technology that is a charger that's two-way, where you can not only charge the vehicle, but if the person signs up or has the ability to forfeit some of that power that's in their vehicle battery, that can go back on the grid if it's needed. So if we have a shortage of power when we get in a heavy heat wave or maybe generation's gone down or something, you could technically sign up people that are willing to sell that electricity or bring that electricity back onto the grid, which is an efficient way. So we're working with R&D and other suppliers to test some of that out. I think we've got one here on site right now that's running through some tests. And so, you know, again, we're looking at technology. There's some tricks to that, and I'm sure Rachel can speak to that. I kind of know the ground level portion of it because I'm having the one that has to get it installed. But it's a really unique concept in my mind, and it's something that could help keeping us from building larger and larger plants. So,
yeah, I mean, I know about with, you know, EV electric vehicle adoption becoming so prevalent, you know, more and more every day. And these cars have such large batteries that, yeah, you can power a house if there's an outage. I didn't even think about how we could sell that power back to you guys just to keep that efficiency going. I think I got the chills just hearing that. Pretty crazy. So that had nothing to do with the diesel hydrogen generated fuel cells?
Yeah, so the hydrogen fuel cell comes in because currently standby power for buildings or critical facilities like our control center, we use diesel generators, right? And California Air Quality Board is slowly but surely putting a lot of restrictions on the emissions of these generators. We've cleaned them up as much as possible, but they still, if they produce carbon, right? So one of the things we're looking at is when we build our new PCC, we're looking at possibly bringing a hydrogen fuel cell, which works off hydrogen. It produces water as a byproduct. The key is to get the hydrogen that runs it to make it green hydrogen. Currently, there's a lot of gray hydrogen, they call it, or black hydrogen, so you want to be using green hydrogen that's generated from renewable sources, okay, which is expensive. But the advantage of a hydrogen fuel cell, if this technology and the hydrogen cost can come down, is during these events where we maybe have a possible shortage of electricity, you can take that load off the grid. Basically, you can remove that building off the grid, run your hydrogen generator. You're not producing any carbon, and you've now reduced that load. There's load shed programs that we use that commercial businesses sign up for, where we ask them at times when there's a possible shortage to shed load, and they'll turn off portions of their light, or they'll stop certain operations to kind of help with the load on the grid. If we can get a green technology like hydrogen fuel cell, if that can become a viable option, that there's an option in the load shed during periods of high load. So, you know, we like to walk, like I say, talk the talk, walk the walk. So we're looking at the potential of installing hydrogen fuel cell at our facility to see how that works. And also that industry, it's struggling a little bit, but it does seem to be moving in that direction. Hydrogen fuel cells are also moving in the direction for diesel, for your semi-diesel trucks. You know, if that can take off, then you can fuel those trucks when they go up over Reno, Nevada, right? You could just stop, to fuel it up with hydrogen and it can keep going, as opposed to a battery electric truck that takes long periods and a high volume of electricity to charge. But there's other innovation. We're going to end up, you know, I have faith in the human experience, that we're going to innovate our way out of this problem. We are. They're working on solid state batteries. There's a lot of things that, if we can solve some problems, it will make things a lot easier and a lot more viable.
Oh, 100%. But the thing what boggles me is, like, for you all, there's so many new innovations and you guys have to focus on sustainability and making sure everything's green. But technology changes so rapidly. Batteries 5 years ago couldn't last what they do today, right? How do you guys make decisions on what to choose for the future if technology is moving that quick, right? If hydrogen fuel cells, you know, you see it moving pretty well right now, but then what if in 10 years they're nothing? Like, the only reason why I bring this up is because we had an interview with UC Davis, the campus, and that's what they brought up with electric vehicle chargers. So, like, we don't know what the next 5 years is going to look like. We can make our guess, but if we put all of our ducks into one thing and it doesn't go the right way, we kind of waste a lot of time. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I can speak with that. You know, I think the key thing is, you know, SMUD has always been one to lean in. I think our very aggressive goals are very indicative of that. But we, you know, it's, I think it's in our DNA that we lean in. So we have always had a very robust R&D program and a robust focus on innovation. I think what we do is we do a lot of, the strategy team, for example, we actually do a lot of analysis. We're looking at, you know, where are policymakers going? What is the policy drivers? We look at the financials, like as we look at technologies and newer technologies that are coming down the pike, you know, we test out some of them. Sometimes we do it in very, very small scale. Like, you know, Al mentioned hydrogen fuel cells. Well, you know, we had a hydrogen fuel cell car fueling station at our HQ parking lot, you know, many, many years ago, funded, you know, in part by, you know, grant funding at the federal level, partnership with auto OEMs, and fueling companies as well. So we co-invest, we get grant funding from federal and state sources and other sources. We partner with these technology companies. We start small and do some demonstration, whether it's research project or demonstrations, to sort of kick the tires and sort of figure out the kinks. And this is where having the culture from an innovation standpoint, where you can try some things out, some things work, some things don't work so well. I think you have to recognize that. So you make a small investment. And then as the technologies mature, then that's when you start scaling. So a good example is, you know, I think we tried to seed the market, but we also want to encourage, you know, companies and startups and things like that to eventually flourish. So from an EV charging standpoint, before there was a lot of DC fast chargers in the Sacramento area, from an R&D project standpoint, research and development installed 6 different DC fast chargers throughout the area, right? One at SMUD, one at the Sacramento Food Co-op, one at Amtrak station, one at the airport, you know, one at a few different grocery stores and things like that. Well, those technologies are very much outdated, right? And they had issues, you know, every once in a while. It's like, you know, the card reader wasn't always communicating. You had, you know, some things. And eventually, and then higher powered, more and more higher powered DC fast chargers came into play. We've replaced the DC fast charger out at the HQ parking lot one multiple times, right? To get higher power, to get different, you know, functionality and things like that. So I think the key is being willing to experiment, trying to learn, recognizing that, you know, some may work out the way you think, some may not work out the way you think, and then you iterate. But then there has to be a reason to believe, right? There has to be a business case and a business proposition that, oh, battery storage technology costs will come down and they will be cost competitive. We'll do some stuff on a small scale. We'll partner with technology companies. We'll partner with the federal government, with our, you know, with the state, to get additional funding to co-invest in trying out these different things, and we learn together. I think the other thing is that the utility industry is very much one that we share information and best practices with each other. You know, all the conferences and things like that, they are sharing the use cases, the experiments that they've done, the pilots, the demonstrations, and we learn from each other as well to be able to then, you know, help support those types of transitions. So it does take experimentation before we get there. And some of them work and some of them don't work.
Well, yeah, I mean, Rachel, that's interesting. But the thing that I like the most when you talk is like how passionate you are when you talk about your job and what you're doing at SMOT and about your team, everything. Like, you really like what you're doing, and that's great.
Yeah. No, it's definitely apparent. I mean, everything that you just mentioned, Rachel, I see it in kind of like starting a company, like entrepreneurship. Yeah. You have your idea. You have to have a lot of resiliency, because if something doesn't go right, you need to pick yourself back up, iterate through it, and make sure it keeps working. Yeah, that was a great, great answer there. Al, you want to second anything on that for your facilities management?
Yeah, we, you know, and on the facility side, we do the same thing. And currently we're running a pilot on a different type of charger, a charger that, you know, it doesn't, most all your network chargers work off a cell service or a Wi-Fi connection. And this charger, this company has come out with this charger, it works off the person who's using it, it works off their Bluetooth. So the data from the charger runs on the backside of the person's Bluetooth and cellular network. So you're not having the person that owns the charger isn't having to pay for the cell service and so forth. They're paying for the cloud, but that infrastructure, if they're in an area where there's not that infrastructure that to do that networking, this charger is a really good fit. So we're running a pilot. Yeah. We're thinking about, it seems to be fairly successful. They're a startup company too, mm-hmm. Just like Joppa was when we, so we look at the technology, we see if it's viable, if it's something that's usable, cost effective, right? And to mm-hmm. me, that's the best thing you can do is you give, that's how technology gets a chance, right? We run a small pilot. If it's successful, we might move forward. We're looking at replacing most of our employee chargers with this if it's successful. And then that gives that company an example that their technology works and so forth. It increases their confidence level.
Yeah.
And then it moves forward. And then hopefully other companies or other charger manufacturers see the benefit, and it just moves things along to the next step, right?
I mean, I'm now, you just saying that, it makes me nostalgic. I almost cried a little just because, like, you Smud gave us a chance. You guys were our second customer, you know, and I was still in school, and, you know, I was talking to Al, and I was like, yeah, we can do this. And you know, just working with Al was amazing because you knew that we were a startup. You're like, here's your chance. And, you know, luckily it worked out because, you know, we didn't lie about what we did, but, you know, having you guys support us and having Smud, you know, as a client or even as a friend now, you know, has lifted our company up a lot. You
well,
know, gave us a lot of
you too. We challenged you because your concept was just to put down the pucks and to have your app, right? But we wanted a display board that also told what spaces were available, right? Which was something you had never done. It was not part of your business model. And if you could go to all kinds of garages and you can see display boards to tell you how many parking spaces are available, right? Mm-hmm. You guys had only thought of the app side, but we forced you or challenged you to modify
technology. Was forced.
Well, yeah, I guess we kind of forced you because it said, if you can't do this, then it's done, right? But it challenged you to improvise your technology to put up a board that could say how many spots we had in our garage, that someone could get a visual indicator that didn't have to look at their phone, right? Mm-hmm, and because of that actually, in a sense, makes your model a little bit more viable too, because customers have options. So that's what we do. You know, that's what R&D does all the time too. We have companies that come to us with how their technology works. And sometimes we say, well, okay, you can do this, but really what we see in the market is we need to be able to do this and this and this. And because we're in the market, you know, Rachel is in the business, we get the feedback from customers. So we can provide that outside perspective to people that are challenging the technology in the market.
Yeah, I remember
SMUD. I think that, you know, that's one of the greatest things about working for SMUD is we're empowered as individuals to make these decisions. I don't have to go up to an executive level to ask them, hey, can I do this? We're empowered that we're trusted to understand the technology, understand what we're doing, our business models, and the cost and the risk, and do it in the best interest of our customer owners, right? Because we are owned by our customers. And so, and I'm a customer too. So, it doesn't do us any good to waste any money, right? What we want to do is we want to get good usage out of the dollars that are spent and budgeted for these items.
I remember putting in that sign. It was such a challenge at first, like being our second customer, and they're like, yeah, we need to sign up within 3 weeks. And I was like, whoa. And then you're like, you can't get onto our internet. You have to figure that out. I was like, whoa, I didn't even know what to do at that point. Like behind the scenes, Al, me and my co-founder, I think we stayed up 36 hours, like straight, trying to figure out how to get a digital sign onto cellular. And you guys were cutting the ribbon the day of us finishing. We're like, oh, we got it. And then you're like, perfect. And I was like, oh, and then smooth sailing after that. So yes, it was easy. Don't worry. I mean, you guys didn't force us at all. 36 hours, no sleep. That's nothing. Okay, so let's take a pause real quick. We're pretty much at the end. I'm going to edit this part right out. How are you guys doing right now? Good?
Yeah, good.
Okay. This has been so much fun. I think we're going to do one more question each. And it's pretty much just, hey, what do you need help with? Or what do you want to tell, the world? Or what would you like, from the community? If you want the community to know, hey, some of the best, people out there, and these are the reasons why. Or Al, I'm going to be on a movie. I want to talk about my new movie that's coming out, this is the time to talk about it. Okay, so we'll get back in. Yeah, great one. This is towards the end of the segment, so I want to take some time with the both of you. Rachel, I'll ask you individually, and Al, but at the end of our episodes, do you want to just ask, how can we help you? Is there anything you want to tell the world or let the community know what SMUD is doing great? Rachel, you can go first.
Sure. I talked about the partnership between our customers and us, and that really, as we strive for our future goals, which are really to best serve our community and our environment, we need that partnership with our customers. So actually our marketing team has put together, wanting to work together on creating a clean power city. And so they have a call to action to join the charge. So if you go to SMUD's website and you Google, clean power city or join the charge, actually it provides you an opportunity to sign up to join the charge. I think part of that is just initially getting everybody excited about it. But at the end of the day, we do need customers to take action, right? And we want our customers to take action. That's another thing that I love about SMUD so much. I talked about the fact that people love their utility, but there's these statistics that people think about their utility like 7 minutes a year or 9 minutes a year or something like that. Some consulting company came up with it many, many years ago. But I think SMUD customers actually think about SMUD more than that minimum. They're willing to engage. We don't expect them to think about energy all the time like we do. We think it's pretty cool, but but they are willing to partner with us. And I think that's really the key, is working hand in hand, recognizing that we're doing that for the good of our community and for our environment, and definitely encourage all of your listeners and our community to participate in that. The other thing I'll just say from a JAPA standpoint, like of ask of you, right, as a startup and as an innovator, is, we love working with innovators. As Al mentioned, and it sounds like from the stories of working together, we do this all the time with startups, right? To Al's point, is being a user or being, an end customer, we often have ideas of how to make things better. So we very much welcome those that have ideas that can help support us in our mission and our customers in trying to achieve our goals. So definitely welcome the startup communities, but also entities like you. Is like, what's the next problem you're going to tackle? And definitely welcome the opportunity to engage on those things.
Well, Rachel, I don't know if you knew, I have a second venture, which is an accelerator geared towards undergraduate entrepreneurs called Plasma at UC Davis. So I started that when I was, so you guys need a funnel of smart, brilliant students that are building amazing things. You know, we should definitely talk more and get SMUD connected with Plasma, because it's my passion project, and I love helping other entrepreneurs just grow what they can. No, it's great to hear. SMUD has been a backbone of the community up here in Sacramento and the Sacramento region. Like I mentioned earlier, SMUD is everywhere, at every entrepreneurial event. I'm always talking with them. I think they hosted or helped host the Startup World Cup, which Joppa got top 10 in the world 2 years ago. So that was awesome.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Al, your turn. Lay it on us.
So, you know, that's all I have is I want people to believe, right? I want them to believe in that they can make a difference, right? You know, some people get cynical and they say, you know, how am I going to make, we're not going to save the world. But you're going to save it one grain of sand at a time, right? And that, you know, each grain of sand makes a beach, right? So people need to believe that the individual effort that they can make, any small effort, makes a difference, okay? If you know, my son has a plug-in hybrid, right? Which isn't ideal, right? But he also gets 100 miles to the gallon. He drives back and forth to Sac State. And when he drives to Sac State, he's on all electric. And he plugs in when he's there. And when he drives home, he's all electric, right? So he's not contributing to the carbon in our air, right? Mm-hmm. If he has to go a long trip down to LA, then he feels a little better about it because he's using gasoline, but he's getting good mileage, right? EVs, if you can do an EV, then you do an EV, right? He's going to move into an apartment, a lot of apartment complexes. You know, an EV is a challenge, so he went with a plug-in hybrid. But every little step, right, from using a glass, an aluminum bottle for your water, every little thing that you can do that kind of helps the environment from using your power, you know, using LED light bulbs, just the simple things that people do collectively, it makes a significant difference. And when it comes to energy, the small things that every household does makes a big difference on the grid. And Rachel can contest to this. So if you even turn them off lights, you know, it saves you cost during that premium hour. But not only does it save you cost, it helps save your rates to be maintained at a low level. So by everybody working together, right, we can get there. And so my whole thing is have faith, right? Believe and work towards that.
Well, I know I'm a big believer in you, Al, and now you, Rachel, definitely. And I'm a huge believer in SMUD, so I'm going to move across the river so I can get SMUD services. And for sure, I'm going to be charging my car after midnight now. Thank you for all that information. I'm going to look more into that because, I'm one of those people that didn't know this and didn't have knowledge. And as soon as I get home, I plug in the car and it has all those features in the car too. Like, don't charge till midnight. And so thank you. I have homework right after this.
And that wraps up another episode of Japa Talks. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's conversation and want to learn more, don't forget to visit our website at www.parkjapa.com and follow us on our social media at ParkJapa via X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Subscribe to Japa Talks on your favorite podcast platform to never miss an episode. You've been listening to Japa Talks. Join us next time as we continue to explore the innovations driving the future of parking and transportation. Until then, keep moving forward.
thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, we're done. I mean, we're recording still, but yeah, we're totally offline. What'd you think?
Yeah, that's it was great.
I don't know, Rachel, tell me, how did I do?
You're great, Al, and you bring such the personal piece to it, which I loved how you ended it, because it is so true, right? I mean, to the point that we just converted one, he's a grain of sand, right? They're a grain of sand. They're grains of sand that are not going to charge their vehicle until, like, after midnight. You're absolutely right. So very much, yeah, yeah, okay, really yeah. Love this.
Yeah, Al, you did amazing. Rachel, you did amazing.
Good job. Well, Rachel always does a good job. She does this for a living.
Rachel, we should meet up sometime.
I get to be on the circuit a lot. I get to be on the circuit a lot. All right.
Everything you said was new for me, so
I learned a lot. Oh, was it good? No, yeah, I mean, this is what we're trying to do is it goes back to, I love, Al, the visual, like every grain of sand. We're trying to get the power of the many is really, like, when we talk virtual power plant, that's that concept is the power of the many. It's a lots of little things can build up instead of building. So back in the days, for those that worked in energy efficiency and things like that, there was the Rosenfeld curve, and it was basically, you know, that energy efficiency can basically make up for needing to do a power plant. And so it's the conservation power plant is like, hey, if everybody can reduce a little bit, you can avoid building a gas.
And I actually love this topic because I'm like always looking towards like recycling, saving energy. Like my mom is that way as well. So I've learned from her like to recycle every single thing. Like I'm always like turning the lights off, TV always when I leave. Like some other people are not that way, but I'm like always paying attention to that. And right now I don't have an EV, but I would like to like in a few years to have one and still like contribute to what you were saying before. And yeah,
well, when we part of those Roseville Sutter Health, we can get you here.
There you go. Those milestones to look forward to, right? She gets a big bonus then.
No, I think this is great. We're using a lot of AI for editing podcasts, so it literally it takes a day for us to finish everything, so we can send it off pretty quick. No, it was all my investors were like, don't do a podcast, Matt. It's going to take up all your time. I was like, yeah, you're right. I probably won't do it. And then I was like, let me try it out. I'm pretty good with AI, and finished the whole podcast in 2 hours. And I was like, okay, we're going to do a podcast, guys. It's a no-brainer for us. So, and then your talk about grants was interesting because we're starting to get into grants right now. We're doing some work with the California DMV. So we can bring some of these projects over to your guys' campus. We're doing a lot with ADA spaces with them and fraud. So.
Well, so one thing on the, I mean, not to talk too much shop, but like to the point that you can sense when a car is there, one of the things that we've noticed with regards to managed EV charging, so we know in order to mitigate the grid investments that we need to make is that if we can shift customers that are, you know, charging their EV to sort of off-peak times, or even if there's too many EVs on a circuit to make sure not all the EVs are charging at once, what we also know from our pilots that we've been doing through R&D is that people don't plug in every day, which makes sense, right? Like if their EV is, you know, ours is on, I mean, we have an older Leaf and it's 150 mile range, but all the EVs these days are 200, 300 miles 300, and stuff like that. Yeah. So people don't plug in every day, but if you're trying to do managed EV charging, right, ideally people are plugging in every day. So sensing that the car is there and then being able to know like, hey, which ones are actually parked that could tap into the resource can help us from an intelligence standpoint of how much capacity, how much EV battery capacity is actually available on that circuit, because I know how many EVs are actually there, not just those that are plugged in, but then how do we encourage people to be able to be in a concentrated area to be able to plug in from whether it's managed charging or in the future V2G. So it's those types of things that, you know, that are helpful just of like, okay, what does your foundational technology do? But then how can that be helpful as a data source or help us achieve more predictability of things that we want to achieve outside of that functionality as well?
Well, that's the next challenge for JAPA that we have is if the Hay Charger takes off, like we think it is, and we start using the Hay Charger for employee charging, we're also putting JAPA pucks underneath all those spots. The next step or challenge for JAPA and Hay Charger is to integrate the data that's collected from JAPA, the actual parking, to the data that's coming from the charger. And then we know, then we know if a car is parked in a spot, how long it was parked there, and how much charge it took, and how long it sat there.
Or if it's not even, if it's parked and not even charging. So,
I'm not quite sure how all the data will be used, but we will be looking at the possibility of integrating integrating that data just to see how that works. That's a little sidebar that I'm kind of
we're pushing that already. Yeah, I already talked to Casey to set us up with some of the vendors for the reps for your vendors. And we're also working with UC Davis Medical Center on pushing some of this because, yeah, there's a huge problem with people parking on EV chargers and not even charging. Mm-hmm. So we have so much data that we can integrate. All we have to do is say, hey, is this EV charger having power put through it? And then we just get the APIs. So we could have it out in a couple months, or less than a month for you all. And this is our big push towards that. So we also appreciate this opportunity, but it's going to be done pretty soon. And then we're pushing that over to ADA, the ADA spaces with the same notion, but connecting it with the DMV app to say, hey, is this person handicapped or ADA accessible? And are they parked on the space pretty much? So we're trying to do things outside of parking. I mean, it is parking, but what other people aren't really focused on. Like what we're doing with hospitals is we're letting the hospital, we put our sensors on every ADA space at a hospital in Texas, and it's a children's hospital. And whenever a patient arrives, we automatically alert the hospital, say, hey, go That's send somebody nice out there.
To get
and
them
they send
ready
out
to go.
And get, they go out with a wheelchair.
That's fantastic.
So we're looking at different use cases.
Are you entertaining anything relative to wireless charging or induction charging?
We have to look more into it, but I mean, we're always open, right? We're trying to maintain our innovative. So if you have anything you want us to look into.
Yeah, sort of like the in-road or, you know,
driving
charging, just driving over and charging, like the wireless charging, just because SMUD joined Aspire. It's like a National Science Foundation research based out of Utah. But have, you know, my staff person has been sort of watching it. It's still early, right? Yeah. But I was in Detroit last week, and you know, in Detroit, in front of their train station, they've got a little bit of a path with induction charging. And then Florida, I think Central Florida is putting in a strip like
near, I live in Miami.
Yeah, he hit me. I think your employee hit me up for like fleet charging, and it's really quite too early for.
Yeah. I know he was talking to Casey, and Peter was the one that's Peter's interesting because he's an angel investor that wanted sort of a full-time job to keep him busy but doesn't need a job kind of thing. But he's great because you know, he's kind of got that lens as an investor, right? As a VC investor, but sometimes a little bit upstream of kind of some of the things.
No, it was interesting information and something I put in my back pocket for future. I'm going to be around for a while longer. So, you know, I like innovative things. I'm not afraid of innovation.
Yeah. When we were writing the case study, I was like, now I understand why Matt clicked with all that much. Like, like really like innovation, and Maddie's like every single day talking about innovation. ChatGPT launched ChatGPT 4.0. I don't know what, and Matt is already like the expert using it.
They shut me down at SMUD. I was using
That's the thing is, use your home computer, Al. Use your home computer. Don't use SMUD. Peter, actually the guy on my team's looking at induction charging for our holiday, not to keep you guys, but for our holiday party, we were part of Scott Martin's team, and for the second year last year was the second year of doing a gingerbread house competition. And so Peter was on my team, and he plugged into the rules into ChatGPT, but made sure everybody knew. I only did it at home with my home email. I didn't do it at SMUD. It spit out this story about, you know, we should build a rocket ship for the gingerbread house competition. And we actually did, and we won. You know, part of the story was like, hey, we plugged in the rules into ChatGPT, and you know, it's like, you know, it's like a mission to the moon. SMUD zero carbon plan is a moonshot. So apparently,
I mean, I use ChatGPT for, I said, plan me a day for two people spending $200 in San Francisco giving me times and addresses.
Did you really? And, my husband's birthday's coming up next week. I need to do that.
Oh my gosh, Rachel. I told my girlfriend, I was like, let's just try it out, you know? And I said, spend a day in San Francisco the whole day. It was so much fun. We went to nice bakery in the beginning. It took us to an arts and crafts fair.
I'm going to talk to Michelle and tell her that it's not you.
He's going to know all of
He's not taking dates. It's AI.
He's resourceful. He's using his resources effectively.
I mean,
her last I'm going to have to try it for next week.
try it out, Okay. But Rachel, I would love to meet up with you sometime or talk more.
Yeah,
and then
definitely, and I would love to hear more about the one that you had mentioned about the undergrad entrepreneurship too, that I think I'd love to hear a little more about that. But yeah, maybe we can set up some time. My admin is out this week, but we can set up some time. Maybe we can meet up. Where are you? Are you based? Where are you based?
I'm right by Drake's The Barn.
In West Sac. Okay.
In West Sac. So right there. I just moved here like 6 months ago, but Plasma is what it's called. We just had our demo day, just like 2 weeks ago. We had, I think 10 people in the cohort. We gave out $23,000 for it. So it was awesome. But I'll plug you in. We're always looking for people to come and speak or even just check it out. Al, you're more than welcome to as well. So
very cool.
Okay.
Okay. Well, wonderful talking with all of you. This was fun.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad you came, Rachel. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.